All right, so are you ready for a case that really makes you think about what it means to be a good neighbor?
Oh, yeah, this one's a doozy.
We're looking at State of Lackatosh. It's a 1995 case out of Pennsylvania.
Yeah, and it really kind of throws a wrench in the whole idea of helping, like when helping turns into something a lot more sinister.
Yeah, you've got wills, you've got a lot of money, and a court that's not messing around. They're calling out some seriously shady behavior.
What gets me is this isn't just some boring legal analysis, right?
Well,
This is a story that sucks you in.
oh yeah.
It makes you question everything. You're like, where is that line between being genuinely kind and totally taking advantage of someone?
Yeah, and that's what we're going to dive into today, right?
All
We've
right.
got it all. We've got the court documents, we've got legal breakdowns, all that good stuff. We're going way beyond just the facts of the case here.
Oh, for sure.
We're going to pull out the things that matter to you, especially if you're ever dealing with estate planning.
Especially if you're the one writing the will, or if you're on the other side, having to contest a will.
Yeah.
It's like a crash course in what not to do.
Yeah.
It's packed with lessons that'll make you a better lawyer and a more ethical one, that's for sure.
Okay, so let's set the stage. It's 1988. We've got Rose Lakatos. She's a woman in her 70s.
Okay.
And tragedy strikes. She loses her home in a fire.
Oh,
It's
wow.
a devastating blow. She's
Absolutely.
vulnerable. She's trying to pick up the pieces. And that's when Roger Jacobs enters the picture.
Okay.
He's the seemingly helpful neighbor.
Uh-oh.
At first, he seems like a good Samaritan,
Right.
visiting Rose almost every day, running errands, giving her rides, the kind of stuff you'd expect from a kind neighbor.
Yeah, totally normal.
So far, so good, right?
Yeah.
But here's where things start to take a turn.
Oh, no.
Within 6 months, Jacobs has convinced Rose to give him power of attorney over her finances.
Now, hold on a second.
Huge red flag.
It's handing over the keys to the castle, For anyone who's dealt with estate planning, that's a big deal.
It's a big deal, and it doesn't stop there.
Oh, boy.
Fast forward a bit, Jacobs takes Rose to his cousin, who conveniently happens to be an attorney, to draw up a new will. And guess what?
What?
The new will leaves the bulk of Rose's estate, almost 90% of it, which is a whopping $268,000 to, you guessed it, Roger Jacobs.
Okay, so now we're not just talking about maybe something's fishy here. This is starting to smell really
It's
bad.
starting to reek. Why would someone who's just being a good neighbor end up inheriting almost everything?
Exactly, and this is where we really start to see the cracks in the facade.
And over the next few years, things go from bad to worse for Rose.
Oh no, how so?
By 1990, she's living in horrible conditions,
Ugh.
behind on bills, behind on taxes, living in squalor.
That's just awful.
On top of that, over $120,000 of her assets are just gone. Poof, vanished.
So Jacobs's help at this point is looking more like exploitation, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. It's like watching someone slowly drain a bank account while wearing a very convincing concerned friend mask.
That's a good analogy.
Thankfully, the guardian of Rose's estate stepped in.
Thank goodness.
And they said, wait a minute, something ain't right here.
Yeah.
They filed a petition to revoke the will, arguing that Jacobs had used undue influence over Rose.
Okay, so now we're getting into the legal nitty-gritty.
This is where the legal battle really heats up. But to understand how the court tackled this, we need to break down how Pennsylvania defines undue influence.
Right, because it's not just about someone being pushy or persuasive. There's a specific legal test for it.
Okay, so walk us through it. What are the elements that the court looks at to figure out if there's undue influence?
All right, so the first part is what we call a confidential relationship.
Okay.
This means there is a relationship of trust and dependence between the person making the will and the person who's accused of influencing them.
So in this case, you could argue that Jacobs, acting as Rose's caretaker, yeah, he created that kind of relationship with her, right?
Exactly.
She relied on him, she trusted him.
Right. He had her confidence.
Okay, so that's one. What's the second part of the test?
The second part is that the person who's accused of undue influence, they gotta have gotten a substantial benefit from the will.
Okay.
And in this case, it's pretty clear that Jacobs was in line to inherit a massive chunk of change, almost the entire estate.
All right, so two out of three boxes checked. What's the third part?
The third part, this one gets a little tricky. You have to show that the person who made the will, that they had what's called a weakened intellect.
Okay, so what does that mean? Does that mean they had to be declared, mentally incompetent?
Not necessarily. It doesn't mean they were legally incompetent. It means that their judgment was impaired in some way.
So in Rose's case, it's not that she had to be, declared incapable of making a will. There just had to be evidence that she could be easily manipulated.
Exactly. The court made it very clear that even someone who's got some cognitive decline, they could still meet this requirement if it made them susceptible to being taken advantage of.
Okay, so we've got the legal framework.
Right.
But how did they actually prove this in court? What kind of evidence did they use to convince the judge that Jacobs was, you know, pulling the strings?
Well, they had a few key pieces of evidence that really sealed the deal.
Okay.
One of them was testimony from the attorney who wrote up the will. Remember, Jacobs's cousin.
Yeah.
He admitted that he had some doubts about Rose's ability to handle her own affairs.
Oh, wow.
And he even questioned whether she was competent enough to be involved in a lawsuit that was happening around the same time.
So even the lawyer who was supposed to be looking out for Rose, he had concerns.
Exactly.
That's pretty damning.
It is. And then there's the audio recording from the will signing itself.
Oh, wow.
This really captured Rose's state of mind during that crucial moment.
Okay.
And what it revealed was that she was easily distracted, she had trouble focusing, and she even said some things that suggested her mental state was, yeah, it was weakened.
Wow, that's a smoking gun.
It is. But the court didn't just stop there. They also looked at the big picture. Remember those awful living conditions, the missing money?
Yeah.
The court found that Jacobs' failure to act with what they called scrupulous fairness as someone in a position of trust.
Yeah.
That was a huge red flag.
So it wasn't just about the will itself. They were connecting the dots between Jacob's behavior, like letting Rose live in neglect while her money was disappearing.
Right.
And the circumstances surrounding that will being created.
Exactly. And that's what makes this case so important. The court didn't just focus on the legal technicalities of the will itself. They looked at the ethics of the whole situation.
That's huge, especially for our lawyer listeners.
Absolutely.
This case has massive implications for estate planning, especially when you're dealing with older clients. What are the big lessons here? What should we be taking away from a state of Lakatosh?
Well, one of the biggest takeaways is the importance of capacity assessments.
Yeah.
Attorneys have an ethical duty to make sure their clients understand what they're doing when they sign a will. Okay.
If there's any doubt about the client's mental capacity, we have to document everything very carefully.
So if you're in that situation, would it be wise to bring in a doctor, you know, to do an evaluation just to be extra sure?
Absolutely. You want to be able to prove that you did everything you could to make sure your client was of sound mind when they made those decisions. This case also raises a big red flag about conflicts of interest.
Oh, yeah.
Jacobs taking Rose to his own cousin to write up the will, that created a situation that looked incredibly shady.
Yeah, that's a great point. So if you're ever in a situation where a potential beneficiary is referring a client to you for estate planning, red alert.
Absolutely.
You might want to think twice before taking on that client. You could be putting yourself in a really tough spot.
And while it wasn't the deciding factor in this case, that audio recording of the will signing, that was powerful evidence.
Yeah.
It really showed the court what Rose's mental state was like at that time. So practically speaking, using video or audio recordings during will signings, especially in cases like this, that could be a really smart move for lawyers.
It could be. It gives you concrete evidence of the client's capacity and their understanding.
It's all about protecting your clients and making sure their wishes are truly being respected. This case really shows how undue influence isn't always some big, dramatic, in-your-face thing. It could be this slow, sneaky erosion of someone's free will, especially when they're vulnerable.
That's a good way to put it.
And as lawyers, we have a responsibility to be aware of that and to take steps to protect our clients from exploitation.
You've hit the nail on the head.
And what's interesting is the court didn't just throw out the will in a state of Lakatosh. They went further and imposed something called a constructive trust on Jacobs.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So for our listeners who might not be legal experts, break that down for us. What is a constructive trust?
So imagine the court is like a referee stepping in to fix a bad call. In this case, it meant that Jacobs had to give back all the money he took from Rose. The court basically said, you benefited from this undue influence, so we're taking that money back and making sure it goes where it belongs.
Wow. So they weren't just stopping the harm from the bad will. They were trying to undo the harm that had already been done.
Precisely.
That's a powerful message.
It is. It shows that courts are serious about holding people accountable for exploiting vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And they have the power to make things right.
A state of Lakatosh is like a legal thriller,
right? It is.
You've got a vulnerable victim. You've got a cunning perpetrator, a courtroom battle. And in the end, justice wins.
I love it.
But beyond all the drama, It offers some incredible lessons for lawyers.
Oh, absolutely.
About ethics, about protecting clients.
Right.
And about those sneaky ways undue influence can creep in.
You know, what's really fascinating to me is that it makes you think about the human side of the law. This isn't just about abstract legal principles. It's about real people and the impact these decisions have on their lives.
And that's what makes this case so compelling.
Agreed. Welcome back. So we've just uncovered this case that really highlights how things can go wrong when you've got trust and someone's vulnerable.
Yeah, it's like you look in a legal funhouse mirror and you see what happens to good intentions when they get all twisted up with greed.
And if you zoom out and look at the big picture, a state of Lakatosh, it didn't just end one fight over a will.
No.
It really shook things up for the whole legal world, especially for lawyers who handle estates.
Yeah, I bet a lot of lawyers were like, whoa, okay.
It made them rethink how they do things, you know?
Yeah.
Made them face some hard questions.
Like, am I really doing all I can to protect my clients from this kind of thing?
Yeah, or like, am I missing some red flags here? Am I putting my clients at risk?
Exactly. It's like, you can't just write up the documents right. You got to be looking out for the ethical stuff, too.
You got to be more than just a legal paper pusher, you know? You got to be an advocate. You got to protect your clients, especially the ones who might be more vulnerable.
It's like that saying, with great power comes great responsibility, but for lawyers.
Exactly. We have a duty to make sure our clients' wishes are really theirs, even when people are trying to challenge those wishes.
And this isn't just a lesson for lawyers, right?
Oh, no, not at all.
It shows regular people how to look out for themselves and their families.
It gives them the knowledge to spot manipulation and fight back against it.
So this case wasn't just about setting a legal precedent. It was about empowering people, right?
Absolutely.
Giving them the power to protect their own choices.
It's about making sure everyone, no matter how old they are or how vulnerable they might be, has the right to make their own decisions without being forced or tricked.
You know, this case also made me think about how technology plays into all of this. We talked about that audio recording from the will signing. It was such strong evidence.
It was a game changer.
And as technology gets better and better, it seems like there's a real opportunity to use things like video recordings, digital signatures, even artificial intelligence to make the whole estate planning process more transparent.
Imagine systems that can flag suspicious activity, like sudden changes to a will or strange money transfers.
Yeah.
And they can immediately alert the right people.
That's a really cool idea. So this case, it showed us a dark side of human nature, but it also gave us some hope.
It did.
Like, we can use technology and change the laws to better protect vulnerable people.
And to make sure their wishes are truly respected.
That's powerful.
It is. And I think that's one of the most important things we can take away from a state of Lakatosh. It reminds us that justice can win, even in really messy and emotional situations.
Yeah.
And it inspires us to keep fighting for a legal system that's fair to everyone.
You know, as we're talking about this, I'm struck by the fact that Estate of Lakatosh is not just a legal case. It's a story about human relationships.
It is.
It's about what happens when someone has power over someone else who's vulnerable.
That's such a good point. It reminds us that the law isn't just about rules and regulations. It's about real people and the real effects those rules have on their lives.
Yeah, as lawyers, we're in a unique position. We can use what we know to make a real difference.
Absolutely.
It's all about using the law to fight for justice and make sure everyone, no matter how old or vulnerable, has the right to make their own choices and have their voice heard.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
All right, we're going to take a quick pause here to gather our thoughts.
Sounds good.
But don't go anywhere.
We'll be right back.
We'll be back with more insights from Estate of Lakatosh right after this. Okay, so we're back, and we're in the home stretch of our deep dive into Estate of Lakatosh. It's been quite a journey.
It really has. We've covered a lot of ground, the legal ins and outs, the ethical questions, and just the human drama of it all, you know?
Yeah, when vulnerability meets manipulation. And as we wrap things up, I keep thinking about how this case had such a big impact. It wasn't just about one will. It really shook things up for estate planning lawyers.
Yeah, it was a real eye-opener for a lot of attorneys.
It made them look in the mirror and ask themselves, am I doing everything I can to protect my clients from undue influence?
Am I missing any red flags? Am I putting my clients at risk?
Exactly. You can't just focus on the legal stuff. You have to be aware of the ethical side of things, too.
You have to be more than just a legal technician. You have to be an advocate for your clients, a protector, especially for those who might be more easily taken advantage of.
It's like they say, with great power comes great responsibility, but for lawyers.
Exactly. We have a duty to make sure our clients' wishes are really their own, even when people are trying to say otherwise.
And this case wasn't just a lesson for lawyers. It showed everyday people how to protect themselves and their loved ones, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It gave them the knowledge to recognize those signs of manipulation and to push back against it.
So this case wasn't just about a legal precedent. It was about empowering people, giving them control over their own choices.
Yeah, it was about making sure everyone, no matter their age or how vulnerable they are, has the right to make their own decisions without being pressured or tricked.
And what really stands out to me is that even though this case involved a really tough situation, in the end, it shows us that justice can prevail.
It's a good reminder that even when things are complicated and emotional, the legal system can be used to set things right and to protect people.
It's a message of hope.
It is.
And I think that's what we can take away from the state of Lakatosh. It made people more aware. It got people talking about ethics and responsibility. And it helped us all understand a little bit better how undue influence works.
It's a case that sticks with you. It reminds you that being vigilant, having empathy, and fighting for justice, those things are important not just in law, but in life.
Well said. Well, that brings us to the end of our deep dive into a state of Lakatosh. We hope you found this exploration insightful and that it gave you something to think about.
It's been great sharing this case with you.
And to our listeners, as always, stay curious, stay informed, and keep those legal minds sharp.